Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Howdy, everybody. Welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. We are here again talking about Blizzard Entertainment and its mini games. I am joined, as always, by my fantastic co-hosts, Liz Harper, the EIC and General Grand High Pooba of the site, and Joe Perez, who is beloved by Reddit. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, and to be fair, it's more you than me.
Not what I saw. I went and looked, my friend, and I saw lots of Joe love. Anyway, though. We should start talking about, I think, possibly the most important story that we didn't really get to talk about last week because it sort of happened after the podcast. Activision Blizzard has now apparently cleared the legal hurdles put up by regulatory agencies for its merger with Microsoft. I shouldn't say it's merger with Microsoft. It's acquisition.
By Microsoft. Yeah.
Microsoft isn't becoming part of them. It's eating them. It's like, whoomp, but regardless, that's all out of the way now. They finally have clearance. I don't know if they do in Britain. I was hearing
that was the regulatory hurdle that they got past. They got
So everything's out of the way. They're going through with it. And there's lots to talk about. One of the things to talk about is the fact that, there's sort of a monkey's paw-esque quality to some of the wishes here. Like, Bobby Kotick is finally gone, as I hoped. Unfortunately, I wished him this monkey's paw. So he's going to be ridiculously wealthy.
He's going to buy a yacht for his yacht that already has a yacht. Again.
Yeah, I mean, when we say ridiculously wealthy, Robert Kotick might very well be a billionaire by 2024. That's how wealthy we're talking about when we say ridiculously wealthy. And then he's almost certain to get a job at some other big company, possibly not even in gaming, possibly not even in computers, where they will pay him even more ridiculously high amounts of money.
Hey, I hear Unity CEO stepped down. Maybe he'll go over there.
Yeah. Oh, God. How can Robert Kotick bring his special brand of evil to you? But regardless, he will be gone.
I suppose we should maybe clarify that he is leaving the company after this year. So we only have a few more months to put up with him.
Was it 2024 he's leaving?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it like at the end of 2024?
The deal?
No. At the end of 2023, he will not be here in 2024.
The deal was the end of the year in which the merger ended or was completed. So the merger is completed now within 2023. So Liz is correct in all things.
Okay. So that's great. I mean, but again, he will be leaving with a ridiculous amount of money. Mm. And he will be leaving effectively never having experienced any real consequences for all the things he did or allowed to happen, which is certainly not something that I think is great. Not just the things like threatening to destroy the life of a woman who worked for him directly. That when we talk about the various harassment scandals, sexual harassment, gender harassment, all sorts, there certainly is something special about the fact that the guy defending all of it was a guy who had once threatened to destroy a person's life. in a like recorded message he left on her, like not answering machine, but voicemail.
Listen, I don't say this often, but I hope that somewhere in a deep dark alley in Mr. Kodak's life post Blizzard, that he's introduced to two individuals named Consequences and Actions, and is made to feel the brunt of the pain that he's caused to other people. Because
yeah, but that does not appear to be this day.
Not today, but hopefully in the future.
Liz, you were going to say something. I heard you.
That's pretty much all I have to say about Bobby Kotick.
But I mean, I'm gonna do something that's unusual for this site. I'm gonna actually take an email question that we were asked. I'm gonna move it up to here because it really deserves to be in part of this discussion. Since the merger completed this morning, I've had three friends reach out to me and ask. This is from Tetsemi, by the way. I'm sorry, I forgot to say your names. From Tetsemi, I've had three friends reach out to me and ask, with Kotick's bleep heading out the door, is it a good time to come back to Blizzard games and WoW in particular? I am going to let Joe and Liz talk about that first before I jump in. I'm going to go start with Joe, with Liz. So if you don't mind, Liz.
I mean, I think it's a good time to be playing WoW, in particular playing WoW, because, you know, the game has a more diverse cast of creators than we've ever seen. They've gotten rid of a lot of people since the sexual harassment lawsuit. And Dragonflight has taken kind of a different angle. There's this hugely diverse cast of characters. And when Blizzard is talking about the game, we're seeing more women and minorities kind of taking center stage to talk and express their enthusiasm about the game. I'm not saying things are perfect over there, but they've tried. You can tell that they've tried really hard to branch out and do more and different stories. And they've definitely put a big effort in, you know, putting female content creators, putting female developers up on the stage where they can talk about the games they love and what they're working on. I think that's been really great. But I don't think you come back to Blizzard games just because Bobby Kotick has left. And I don't think you assume that because Bobby Kotick has left that everything's fine now, because it's not. The problems at Blizzard started before he was in charge, and they will continue after he's gone. I mean, just because he's out the door does not mean that suddenly it's going to be completely perfect. Just because Microsoft is buying the company does not mean every problem is going to be solved. Mm-hmm. It's a huge cultural problem at the company that has been allowed to continue and fester for decades.
And it's not just that company either. It's in the industry.
Yeah.
So yes, Bobby, let us not be unhappy to see the tail end of Bobby Kotick. I think that we should all at least hold aloft a glass and say, Kalu Kalei, you know, we can chortle in our joy, but don't make mistake this for, you know, this isn't the end. We're not like, oh, and then evil was defeated. I mean, no, evil wasn't defeated. One particularly onerous human being has decided of his own accord to leave when it is the most profitable for him to do so.
Mm.
And that's, also, as much as Bobby Kotick is a terrible person, a lot of this stuff wasn't necessarily even on him. Not just because he wasn't in charge when some of it happened. Even stuff that happened while he was in charge, nobody told him about it. He did, you know, no one called up Mr. Kotick and said, hey, we're going to call it the Cosby Room. Is that all right? You know, he didn't, he didn't have any interaction with these decisions. It doesn't make him a shiny knight of goodness. It just means that the people that made those decisions at best made those decisions knowing he didn't care. And in order for it to get better, there can't be people there making decisions like that thinking, well, if I do something awful, no one will care. That can't be there. And that's not just, you don't just replace Bobby Kotick and you're done. You know, it's, yeah, I totally agree with Liz on that one. Anything else, Liz?
I'm really concerned that because Kotick is out, you know, the gaming community is going to assume victory. Victory! Yeah. We got rid of Bobby Kotick! Yay! Everything is good and happy. And it's like, no, this is one thing, one good positive thing, but there are lots of things wrong in the gaming industry. There have been a lot of things wrong at Blizzard for many, many years. And you've got to see the industry work on improving. We can't let them off the hook just because they finally got rid of Bobby Kotick.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, like, I'm going to make a sports analogy here. Sports teams have the biggest support whenever they're winning, right? And the minute something goes wrong, everybody, like most folks, look for a single individual to blame. In Buffalo, it's always the quarterback or the head coach, right? It's, you know, we're the best team ever and we're going to go all the way to the Super Bowl. We lost one game, fire the coach. Like, we have this tendency as humans to sort of like try to find the silver bullet to blame things on for whatever reason, whether it's justification internally or something like that. And I know a lot of people that are looking at the Bobby Kotick situation like that. They're like, well, this will fix everything and Microsoft's going to save the day, just like you pointed out. And it's like, it's not how that works. These problems have existed long before the publicization of all of them, and has existed not just at Blizzard, but every company. And, you know, these have been an ongoing battle for people that have been fighting this, and that they've been doing this for longer than most folks are aware. And it is a victory that Kotick is gone, but it's not a Pyrrhic victory, right? It's a victory where he's getting to go on in his own terms and he's going to be loaded rich as a result of it. And it's not because he was a bad person that got held accountable for the bad things he did. And we see that with a lot of people as well that left Blizzard, that, you know, their involvement was questionable or was bad. And some of them got to leave on their own terms. And where did they go? Other game companies, maybe started their own. Like, it's something that we need to still be vigilant about. Period. It doesn't just go away with this one win. That
before you go on, George, you want to mention this. I find it really disturbing that people keep acting like Microsoft is some sainted group of superheroes come to save us. If you want to know what Microsoft can be like as an employer, ask the people at 343 Industries.
Yeah.
They develop the Halo games. They have some stories for you.
Or
stories will not make you feel happy about, you know, Microsoft.
Or go ask current Wizards employees how they feel about the management team that came over from Microsoft teams that are now in charge of their endeavors.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the industry and in specific companies. Microsoft is not your friend come to save you.
Now,
and go ahead, Yo.
I was going to say, the thing that I will say as far as the part about coming back to the game, these are decisions that only you can make. And we talked about this at the very beginning, and we've talked about this a lot of times on the podcast about, it is ultimately your choice what you choose to do with your time and money. But at the end of the day, if you don't play these games, you're not hurting the executives, right? It's more going to have an impact on the teams that produce those games than anything else. And so, like, when people used to question me about why I was continuing to play WoW, and I know, Matt, I think you got a bunch of those questions too. And, you know, the answer was always, I choose to do this, one, because I still enjoy the game itself, and two, because I want to support my friends that I know still work there and are working on this product. I want to make sure that at the end of the day, some executive sitting in their ivory tower doesn't look at it and say, well, engagement's down, fire 20% of the staff. Let's go. Like, it's a double-edged sword, right? But at the end of the day, only you can decide.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a decision everybody has to make for themselves.
Yep.
You have to look at your conscience. I actually really struggled with it. And I'm going to make an admission here that doesn't really paint me in a positive light. And I am aware of this. If Diablo 4 hadn't been in the pipeline at that point, I don't know that I would have stuck around. But I've been waiting for Diablo 4 for half my life. At least since 2012, when Diablo 3 came out and left me with all sorts of questions and all sorts of, you know, feelings. I wanted Diablo 4. I remember when I went to BlizzCon in 2019, before the pandemic and before we got some of the more horrific problems from Blizzard. They were existing, but they hadn't been publicized as much. I remember sitting in that theater when they played the opening for Diablo 4, the cinematic, and the room changed. Like, there was a pop, like being at a sporting event when something amazing happens. And for a lot of people, this stuff's really important. And you don't want to put games ahead of people. You don't want to put games ahead of the people who work on them or the people who suffered. But these are like, the games are some of the ways I get through stuff. Like, when I started to go blind, games are how I got through it. When my friend Dougal died, games are how I got through it. Dougal and I both loved a lot of the same video games. So it is always a personal decision. You always have to kind of make those decisions yourself and look at what the situation is. In this particular case, I didn't feel like, and I got this from people I knew who had left Blizzard, that doing stuff like just getting rid of all my Blizzard games, not playing Blizzard games anymore, wasn't going to hurt anybody who was up in the C-suite.
Yep.
It was not going to affect them at all. It was going to hurt the people that were still there, still trying to make good games. So that's why I made the decision I did. In terms of going back, though, I think Liz is totally on the money in that whether or not you factor Codec in at all, WoW's in a good place right now. It's in an interesting place. It's in a place where the story is going places it never would have gone before.
Yeah.
And I think that what she said is dead on, and I wanted to reiterate it while still giving her credit for it because she's the one who said it. There's just this feeling of anything can happen that we didn't have before. Like Warlords of Draenor, I think I gave people the entire plot of Warlords of Draenor before I'd actually even seen or heard anything other than what it was that, you know, they were going to Draenor and it was a different Draenor and we were going to see all the war chiefs of the Old Horde. I pretty much nailed that entire plot down in like 5 minutes because it simply wasn't that deep. It wasn't trying to be deep. It wasn't trying to do or say anything new. And I really do feel like in a lot of places, Dragonflight has tried to do new things that are interesting. Are they all going to hit and resonate with everybody? No, it's impossible. A game with as many people who have played it is never going to hit everybody. But I definitely feel like they are trying things that are new and unique. And that's why I am cautiously optimistic to see that continue, depending on what certain people who have returned recently to become creative directors do and say. But do you guys have anything else to say about the merger and about that's the question that Timmy asked before we move on?
I mean, I'm just interested and we'll be watching what happens next.
Liz, if you want to sigh again, you can.
Yeah, that's me done.
All right. We talked about that and that's good and proper. We probably could talk about it more, but we're going to move on to talk about some other things. The first thing I want to talk about actually is that the Hearthstone expansion was just recently announced, which I was surprised by. I kind of thought they'd wait till next month, but nope. Got an announcement for it. It's called Showdown in the Badlands. Am I correct here?
You are. It's I'm also surprised that they announced it right now. They did say in the announcement video that they've got more surprises in store for BlizzCon, but it's like, okay, what can you do that's bigger than an expansion? I don't know what they're gonna do at BlizzCon now, but Hearthstone is, of all the Blizzard games, it's the one that's most on a set schedule. They put out expansions like clockwork, and this was kind of the time. And all of their expansions have such cool themes. This one is set in the Badlands and has a Wild West kind of theme. There are you've kind of got prospectors mining Azerite. It's kind of like a gold rush sort of situation they have going story-wise. So some people are out there, you know, mining Azerite, and some people are there saying, no, you shouldn't, you know, mine Azerite and destroy the planet. It's the blood of the planet. You can't just mine it. And yeah, so it has this particular conflict, and half of the classes are going to be outlaws, and half of the classes are going to be miners. I don't know yet. No, not lawmen. It's like
the prospector thing you mentioned.
Yeah, they're doing the prospector thing, and I can't recall what word they are using for that. But it is interesting because the outlaws, like, there's each set has kind of some different gameplay mechanics, and the prospector classes have an ability to excavate, where certain cards will let you excavate and you'll earn a legendary treasure that you can play. It's a random kind of treasure, and the more times you excavate, the more powerful treasures you'll get. So you might want to build a deck that's kind of really going in on excavation and building up these legendary treasures that have these powerful effects. It's a little random, but you're counting on something that's going to be good, that's going to help you out. And
it's sort of like finally giving you a chance to build that kobold miner deck you've always wanted.
Sure, why not? And on the outlaw side of things, they are really going in on the Highlander gameplay style, which is having a deck with no duplicate cards. a lot. They have a lot of cards that
I
will
love
trigger
Highlander style.
I love the guess. The fact that it took me a second, and I'm like, "Why is it called Highlander style?" Then my brain was like,
"There can be only one."
Yeah. There can be only one.
Rest in peace, Sheldon Mallory.
Blizzard does not call it that. Just literally everyone else calls it that.
Everyone in card games in general calls it that.
Yes,
I know.
Yes.
Well, and that's because because of Sheldon Mallory, who did just pass away, who was the creator of the singleton format for Highlander.
Blizzard calls it singleton. And, you know, the time when they announced it today, they were talking about singleton gameplay. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? And it's like, oh, they're talking about Highlander decks. So it's cool. It has this interesting story and dynamic. It's kind of split the classes in half. So half of them are outlaws and half of them are on kind of this prospecting side. And they each kind of have a different flavor and different abilities. So I think it's going to be really fun. But as always, I really wish there was more story to Hearthstone expansions because they come up with such cool themes, but they haven't been doing any single player story modes or really expanding on that, which makes me kind of sad. So I'm excited, but I'm also a little sad.
All right. I feel like I should say something here, but I feel like also that you've pretty much nailed it. So we can move on. First off, I just wanted to mention really fast, just because I don't think we said anything about it when we found out about it, because I think we found out about it until a couple of days ago. But patch 10.2 is coming out on November 7th. For World of Warcraft, I should make that clear. the patch is named Guardians of the Dream, and it's launching on November 7th. So if you've been wondering, when is the next patch getting here? It's getting here in a month. Actually, less than a month, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks at this point.
It's so close. Yeah. Wow.
Time. I would say 2 weeks because my brain doesn't work very well, but I know that we have at least two more weeks in October, this week and the next week. And then, yeah, so 3 weeks.
It's like three weeks.
But so, yeah, that's happening. In addition, when that comes, we're going to get several things are happening. There's a new Moonkin customization thing happening, which I think is really interesting. I don't even play a druid, but I like that the Moonkin are finally getting to pick and choose and
make you can be a roast chicken.
Yeah. I don't think you should, but you can. I can't stop you. There's also a new feral druid form that I thought was really interesting. The Moonblessed Claw, I think it's called.
Moonblessed Claw.
And it's like a big white cat. Yeah, it's a white and blue cat with, you know, big blue eyes and lots of weird stuff coming up off of it. It's actually really neat looking. I will say that straight up. If I were playing a druid, And I do have one. I just haven't played it in a while. I could seriously get into trying to catch that thing. But yeah, it's really nice. It's nice that druids are getting specific things for this patch because it's such a druid related expansion in a way.
Let's not undersell the cat customization. It's a whole thing. Like you have to go and fill like a whole bunch of vials and go around, and you're not just doing it in the Dragon Isles. You have to go to the Eastern Kingdoms, Kalimdor, Outlands, Northrend, Draenor, the Broken Isles. Like, you're going all over the place. And I like when customization and quests do that. That's really cool because it makes you feel like you earn it. And two, the barrier isn't like go into a raid and hope you get a drop, right? Like, it's a really neat way of doing it. So not only are they getting a cool customization, they're getting other things that have just kind of been like thrown out into the world that maybe weren't there before, at least the one I'm looking at here, where they can go in, you know, actually earn that customization, that skin. And that skin is really rad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. It's very nice.
I mean, one thing about patch 10.2 is obviously we're going to the Emerald Dream and we're going all in on the Emerald Dream thing. And it was a little surprising that we weren't getting more druid specific content. I mean, obviously Blizzard has to make content for everybody. You can't just have a patch that's like, okay, druids get to do all this cool stuff and no one else does. But like the legendary they're adding in patch 10.2, not a druid legendary. It's for strength based melee DPS, which we've seen that one before. Not that I'm complaining, because I am potentially a strength-based melee DPS class myself, but it's like, you know, you kind of expected a little more that would be special for druids in this patch. So it's nice that they're getting something, but I really did expect a little extra.
Yeah, so it is It is strange that there's not more, but maybe there is more and we just don't know about it yet. At any rate, we do know about this stuff. There's other stuff coming out. Like, for instance, we're going to get the whole new raid. We're going to get like a bunch of different talent changes, you know, balance run, all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to get that mentioned because it seemed pretty important and we didn't really get a chance to last week. Because, again, I don't think we knew about this then. I think we knew it was coming, but we didn't.
Yeah, we just got the announcement yesterday. So.
While we're talking about that, though, I did want to mention a couple of things about Diablo 4. First off, right now, Season 2 is live. Like, literally, if you're watching our pre-show, you can see my little baby level 1 character running around the snowlands, getting ready to kill some vampires later. Once they fix the whole deal where I can't currently there is a bug where you can't use cross-connectivity.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that will affect me because I usually play on my console, and I just putting the characters on here for the pre-show because, you know, that's just how I do it. So yeah, that I don't know about yet, but when it gets ironed out, I will be playing on my TV to do stuff really big. But regardless, the season 2 is live. You got the Season of Blood, all sorts of vampire stuff involved, you know, new vampire powers, everything like that. Also, if you were playing season 1 and you're wondering, what happens to all the stuff I got? We have a post on the site about that. Basically, when you log on, you can log on to the character that was previously your season character. There will be a withdraw only tab with all the stuff you put in your stash while you were doing this. So if you had a whole bunch of stuff that you didn't get, you don't want to like lose right away, you will have till the end of season 2 to go through that tab, say, okay, I don't really need this because I already have it on this other character, but I do need this. And you'll have that time to take it out of the withdrawal only. So you don't lose things right away. You've got some time to figure out, oh wow, what do I do with all this stuff? Which I think is nice. I'm also assuming that the season only things, like the you know, hearts that we were all wearing around our fingers, those are just gone. nothing that's season unique will transfer into your stash. I haven't looked yet, but I'm assuming that that's it. So that's thing number one. And I want to give both Liz and Joe a chance to talk about that one before we talk about things. Do you have any opinions about how season 2 is going to work, Joe?
I do not.
Okay, Liz?
I mean, I think season 2 already sounds a lot more engaging than season 1. Because season 1, you went in and you had these malignant hearts to collect. Most of the malignant hearts were not great, and you collected them without even trying to collect them. They were all over the place. Turn a corner and there's a malignant monster who drops their heart on the floor, and then you have to cage it and fight them again. And it just wasn't that engaging because probably 3/4 of the malignant hearts I got, I just threw in the trash. They just weren't good. There was like maybe one good malignant heart of each type. And even then it was like, well, this is better than the other ones, I guess, maybe. So it just wasn't very exciting to engage with. It was just, okay, you have one new type of gem and most of them are bad and they aren't difficult to collect. They just show up. And this season seems a lot meatier with, you know, Matt was talking about the new vampiric powers. We're fighting vampires, but we're also collecting. It's kind of a whole new sort of gear talent system where you are. It reminds me a little bit of Azurite armor, which I know not everyone is a fan of Azurite armor.
I'm screaming internally right now.
I'm sorry I brought that up. It reminds me of Azurite armor, but it's not Azurite armor.
Reminds me more of the corruption mechanic from the end of that expansion, honestly. It doesn't really remind me of Azurite armor.
I mean, you're collecting this different kinds of packed armor, and there's kind of a new faction you're gaining, not renown, you're gaining reputation with, and I don't entirely grok how that's different at this point, but there are so many moving pieces. You can select vampiric powers, but you can't have, you know, all of the vampiric powers all the time. Different kinds of gear will let you equip different kinds of vampiric powers. So you're collecting gear, you're collecting powers, you're combining this with your existing talent system. And it seems like there are so many, many, many moving pieces that you can put together in different ways and make completely new play styles out of these new things. And that's what's really interesting to me. It seems like it unlocks a lot of possibilities where season 1 felt like, okay, I just rolled a new character for no reason, and there are some new gems, and I don't even like them.
Okay, that's actually a pretty reasonable assessment of season one, in my opinion. The other thing I found out today, which I thought was kind of weird, is that Diablo 4 is now available on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that was going to happen. When did you guys hear about this? Was this like a recent thing?
This was last week. They announced it in one of the live streams about season two.
But it's literally there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you go to Steam, which I did, there it is, Diablo 4 on Steam. I'm like, wow, okay. I can't wait to hear how disappointing the numbers are for people, you know, actually playing the game on Steam, as is what Steam is usually used to do.
I don't know. There's 16,000 people or 17,000 people at the time of this recording actively engaging with it, according to the metrics.
Yeah, and that's good. I'm just usually when I hear it, it's usually people using it to prove something is dead. and I don't like that tendency people have. I'm actually hopeful that, you know, it does well there. I do think it's interesting, though, because will we see more of this? As we talked about the merger at the top of the hour, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the merger at the top of the hour is this is an example of something that I think we might see more of because of it.
It's a dangerous thing, though, too, is spreading as quickly as it is, because one of the things just Diablo 4 at the time of this recording, if you go on and look at the Steam reviews, a lot of them right now are it crashes because of the way that everything is integrated with battle.net, right? Like there's some cross shatter or something that isn't playing super nice right this second. But I do think we are going to see more spread of Blizzard IPs to other avenues of delivery. And I think overall that's a good thing. I think it gets it into people's, you know, eyes and their sight line that maybe normally wouldn't. And overall, it's just kind of healthy. And I think they already have Microsoft executives kind of hinting at Blizzard stuff potentially showing up on Xbox or Game Pass stuff later on. I don't think they've outright said anything about it, but
They haven't. They did say that nothing that people currently knew about was going to go to Game Pass anytime soon.
Yeah.
When Diablo 4 was announced, I mean, that was one of the things they made a very good point about. Yeah, it's releasing in June. It's not going to be on Game Pass.
Yep. So. But other stuff, on the other hand, might be. The other thing I think was I'm curious to see what secondary or tertiary things will make it onto other Microsoft stuff. Like if you have, you know, Game Pass, you get X game time or something, or you get some reward unlocked or whatever the case is.
Overwatch is there. I mean, you think Overwatch would be like right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Overwatch seems like it's a natural fit for it. So
we'll find out, though.
Yeah. But right now, we don't know anymore. But I thought we should mention that. See if there's anything. Oh, we do have to mention this. I don't think there was no news about anything new involving Amazon Prime Gaming. I looked and didn't find anything. But Twitch has got a big one. Twitch is doing a series of Twitch drops for the Season of Blood starting today and going up until November 6th, I believe, is the last week that they're doing it, which it ends then a week after that on the 13th. And this one is the Orichalcum Collection, I think it's called, where there's like four different items that each class has access to some of them. For example, right now and until next week, if you watch, I think it's 6 hours. I didn't write that down. Why didn't I write that down? I wrote everything else down. I think it's like you watch 6 hours of Diablo 4 Season 2 stuff on Twitch. You can get rogues, necromancers, and sorcerers can get the one-handed blade cosmetic. I don't know why barbarians can't get that one, because it's not like barbarians don't use one-handed blades, but whatever. The second week is barbarians and druids, who both get the Orichalcum Mallet cosmetic. Week three is barbarians and necromancers, who get the Orichalcum Greatsword cosmetic. And week four is just druids, who get the Orichalcum Quarterstaff. So if you're a druid, you get two shots at two different pieces of gear. If you're a barbarian, same deal, two shots, two different pieces of gear. Necromancers, I'm thinking get two shots at two pieces of gear. And rogues and sorcerers only get one shot.
Mm.
They each only get one piece of gear. So, but that's available via Twitch. Again, every week they're switching. So it's week one, the sword for those three classes. Week two, the hammer for barbarians and druids. Week three, necromancers and barbarians get a two-handed sword. And week four,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's druids getting a quarterstaff, and that's, you know, it's watched the same amount each week as far as I know. Liz, you were going to say something?
I mean, these promotions, it's great that you can go out and get free cosmetics, but man, they are so time intensive, and it's when this is the second time Diablo 4 has done a promotion that's like, okay, watch 6 hours of live streaming for 6 weeks in a row or something like that.
Yeah, it is a lot of. If you want to collect more than one item, you're going to be doing this a while.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's just a lot, and I kind of, I understand it's great for Twitch creators who get a lot of audience, get a lot of people watching when the season launches. But man, it's a commitment. Even if you just, you know, turn on the stream and like walk away from your computer so you're racking up hours, it's a lot.
Yeah, you gotta set up that drinky bird. Just keep hitting the space bar for me, honey. Yeah, that's it. But yeah, it is a lot of time. I do not disagree with you on that one. But nevertheless, I wanted to mention it because it is a pretty big deal in terms of this is a lot of cosmetics. Mm-hmm. I think this is the biggest amount of cosmetics they've done for D4 in this way. And it is, if you think about it, it's free cosmetics. You don't have to pay for the platinum to buy this. You just get it. So, yeah, I think it's pretty cool. But that's basically, and I guess anything else we're supposed to talk about, Liz? I know you added more stuff, and I can't remember. Oh, Hallow's End. Hallow's End. Okay. Hallow's End starts tomorrow on the 18th?
It does. Tomorrow as of the time of this recording. So October 18th. Hallow's End in World of Warcraft.
And then it'll be going until the 1st of November.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get
a couple weeks.
And you mentioned here we're getting a new dragon riding cosmetic. So that's cool. What is it going to be? Do we know?
I know it's for the Windborn Velocidrake. I don't know what it looks like, though.
All right. Windborn Velocidrake, you get a possible new cosmetic item. Be ready for it. And we didn't mention this one, although it's been running for like a week now as we're recording this. Overwatch has got its new Halloween Terror out. I think we mentioned it very briefly. I think we just said, oh, then that's happening.
Yeah.
And we just moved on. But yeah, that's going now. It's been going since the 10th, and it will be going again until the 1st of November. And there's a ton of stuff there. Joe is the only one of us who currently plays Overwatch, however, so we're going to kind of turn and look at Joe and be like, Joe?
So the Halloween Terror thing is, it's an interesting event, at least as far as what I've played of it. It's the Assault Sanctuary type thing. It's a horde survival thing where you are in like Leoric's castle essentially, and you're playing one of eight characters. There's two tank options, four DPS options, and two heal options. And you just have to survive waves of zombie hordes, and they're zombie Omnix, right? Just like you've seen with the Junkensteins
or
Zomnix. I think that's actually what they're called. Like you've seen with Junkenstein's Revenge and things like that. But the interesting thing is that all of the bosses are themed and skinned after Diablo villains, just like the heroes are skinned after Diablo heroes. Like if you're playing Pharah, the skin for Pharah is Tyrael. I think it's Imperius, excuse me. The voiceover work is Imperius's voice actor. It's really cool stuff. Remember the hamster, the wrecking ball guy, that hero.
Yeah.
He's Asmodan.
How could you forget?
He's Asmodan.
That That's perfect.
The thing that I don't understand, and this is something that blew my mind when they introduced him, because he jumps out of the top of it and he's got the Aswadan head and the mech looks like Aswadan's legs and everything like that. And he does his chittering, like, evil giggle and claps his hands. Why does the hamster have nipples? Blizzard, why? Like,
I mean, it's a mammal, Joe.
I'm just curious. Yeah,
hamsters do have nipples. You know that, right?
I'm aware, but it's like, they don't have to be that prominent. Come on. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of chaos. You get to upgrade your weapons as you go along. So, like, just like in Diablo, you get legendary drops, and those drops affect what your abilities do. So, like, I'll use Farrah as an example. Maybe you fire multiple rockets instead of just one every time you, fire one off. When you use your jet propulsion, where you launch yourself into the air, it leaves a column of cleansing holy angel fire behind you. Or when you use her, the E, where it, like, knocks everything around, it also then puts a targeting reticle on them that allows you to do, like, aim assist, very similar to, like, Soldier 76's. It's a lot of fun, surprisingly so. And my friends and I have been having a good time trying to five-star the event, which has not happened yet. It is very easy to die in that game. Very easy. But a lot of fun.
I mean, just they're swarming you with Zomniks. I mean, that kind of makes sense, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, that makes sense.
Roadhog is Butcher is one of the greatest things ever.
Oh, my God.
Because it's literally, it's Roadhog, and it's just, you hear the butcher noise, you hear the butcher laugh, and then all of a sudden, Roadhog's pulling you in with a hook. And they did something to his AI, he always goes to the healer.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the butcher.
It's perfect.
It's perfect. Like, but I mean, it's a lot of fun. Like, I heard the horror movie sound. Like, I was playing a healer the first time, I freaked out, and then I got pulled halfway across the map and just deleted. Like, the butcher just ate my face, as the butcher should.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
And that's. I think that pretty much covers everything.
I mean, do we want to talk any more about the stuff in Season of Blood for Diablo? Because there's
Yeah, there's a lot.
So much.
There's a lot of, like, it. I don't feel like I can give people a tremendously complete understanding of it, because this is all stuff that I haven't gotten to see yet. But
yeah,
definitely should mention at least some of it. One of the things I want guys to understand is that they have, this isn't like, this takes the Season of Malignancy, which was pretty complex, way more complex this time. It is without being as hard to grasp. I don't think it's as hard to grasp. What do you think, Liz?
I mean, I do not yet. I have not played enough myself to really understand the packed armor you're collecting and the how to get vampiric powers. I just haven't gotten a chance to really dig into that. So it feels complex from my point of view, but there's just so much going on. And I love that there's so much going on, because it felt like nothing was going on last season.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that. I didn't really... I tried... I mean, I did play quite a bit in this season, but I kept feeling like, okay, when does this start being fun? Like, I've really been looking forward to this being fun, guys.
I did finish the season journey for season one, which was a bit of a crazy manic rush at the end, because it was like, okay, I need to find one more Helltide commander, and I have like three more Helltides that are going to spawn before the end of the season. It was that kind of like last minute thing. So I played the season. But, I mean, Diablo 4, I love it. I've played hundreds of hours of it. Yeah, but it got some issues. There are a few tiny, itty-bitty, gigantic issues with the game.
Yeah, they're still working on getting seasons to work with Diablo 4 instead of trying to make them be the way they were in Diablos 2 and 3.
Yeah, and also, just the gameplay flow is kind of off because, okay, I'm going to talk about Season 1 before today when Season 2 rolled out. I mean, one of the things was late game after your level 50 turned really quickly into this just horrible, tedious grind because of the way it's scaled. So like if you're doing content in the open world, that's like, oh, I'm going to finish out my side quests. I'm going to go do strongholds. I'm going to do normal dungeons to collect more aspects. Like you could do all of those things and they got increasingly less rewarding as time passed because monsters would only scale up to a certain level based on the world tier. So when you first got into the world tier, everything's higher level than you and you're getting tons of experience for killing it. But as you kept leveling up, you hit a point where things stopped scaling, and then you're fighting things that are five levels beneath you, and you aren't quite good enough to advance to the next world tier yet, and you're just getting no experience. And the only thing it kept scaling was nightmare dungeons. So if you wanted to level, you'd do nightmare dungeons until your eyes were bleeding, because they were just, that was it. That was all the content you had at endgame.
They were the most convenient, because it's not like with a world boss, that's up maybe once a week. I mean, I love the world bosses. I think they are fun to do, but you get maybe one a week. They don't spawn very often. And once you've killed it once, that's pretty much it for that character.
But they have also, they've increased the spawn time of world bosses.
Yeah, they've done that.
For season two.
Yeah, I was talking about season.
Yeah, yeah. And season two, they've increased the spawn time of world bosses. They've increased, when I'm saying increased, I mean decreased. They'll spawn more often. Legion events spawn more often. And the scaling thing I was just talking about is gone. Everything will keep scaling with you. So you are never stuck fighting things that are way low level and you're not getting any experience. Yeah. Which means you can keep leveling in the open world and like enjoying the world of Sanctuary, which is vast and complex. And
yeah, it made the world, it makes the world quest type stuff that you're doing to be more rewarding, because you can still get stuff to do while you're dead. So yeah.
And even while playing all of these hours, I've not done every side quest in the game. I haven't even found every side quest in the game. There are so many side quests, and like you can open your map and see how many you've done this many out of this many, and there are just so many I haven't done, have never seen. And
I mean, the only zone that I know I've done pretty much all of them is Novgorod. You know, the first one.
Fractured Peaks.
Fractured Peaks, yeah. I've done pretty much all of them in Fractured Peaks. I think there's two I haven't done in Fractured Peaks. But then you go like to Skazglen, or even more than Skazglen, the last couple, like Kedjistan and, I want to call it Swampland so badly, I can't remember the name of the swamp.
Hawazar.
Yeah. Hawazar, I think I've got like 12 left that I haven't even found yet. Kedjistan, because of when you get to Kedjistan, there is a ton of stuff you might not have done because you didn't do anything there. You got there just in time to go to hell. You know, that's what you did. You used Kedjistan to get to hell. So yeah, lots of stuff. Like, I mean, Joe told me about one thing, that you could go to the camp from Diablo 3. Remember the camp when you went to the first time to Kedjistan, the camp, you can go back there and it's like all destroyed, obviously, but you can still go in there. You could even find, like, there's an item that you can find that's a reference to, I think it's Shen, Curtius Shen. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. It's just like out of the way, and you're like, oh wow, that place. Like when you go to Alcarnis, which is now a stronghold, and Alcarnis is a nightmare. It's like, oh my god, this place is exactly as bad as you'd think it would be. So yeah, there is a lot in the world of Diablo 4. So,
and there are also these new Blood Harvest events in season two. And I should clarify, the Blood Harvests are only in season if you're playing the seasonal character on the seasonal realms. A lot of content they've added is on all realms, even if you're playing Eternal, if you're not bothering with the season, you just want to play your old characters. A lot of content is going there, but some content, the vampiric powers, the pact armor, and the Blood Harvest events are there only for seasonal characters.
Yeah, but the Blood Harvest thing is still an improvement, because it's like, it takes the idea of the, you know, the malignant things where you go around in the world and look for them, but it makes it like tie into the level, you know, you mentioned the scaling increases and so forth. So it's very much more of a world event than the malignant stuff was.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's kind of, it's a little like Helltides too, where it's this zone that's kind of taken over by these vampiric powers, and where you could go and farm blood because of course they're vampires. And also this is Diablo, so there's a lot of blood. There's a lot of blood
everywhere anyway,
that you need to like collect to fuel your powers. And
just be taking a seat to yourself halfway through.
But there's also a Blood Harvest that's around all the time. Like Helltides, it's okay, there's one Helltide and then it's over and you've got to wait for the next one. There's always a Blood Harvest going on in one of the zones. So you can always go and engage and do this and collect delicious, delicious blood. I don't know. But yeah, it seems a lot more interesting. It seems like there's a lot more to do. And also for that late game leveling thing that I really struggled with last season, there are these new end game bosses. There are five new end game bosses, including Duriel, you know, back from his like brief, quick blink and you'll miss a cameo in the actual story campaign. We're going to be fighting kind of Uber Duriel now. these in-game bosses, which you can summon and kill. And they have a loot table that is all of these uniques. So you can, if you're looking for a certain unique, you can go and farm that specific boss until you get it instead of counting on completely random luck. So that's gonna help late game leveling too. And that's on non-seasonal realms and seasonal realms. That's just everyone can do those now.
The new world bosses are there regardless.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else before we move on?
There's just so much cool stuff. I think we've only like just scratched the surface really because they've, it was a 9 gigabyte patch. There's a lot.
It's a big patch.
There's a lot.
All right. Well, I do want to try to get at least one question in besides the one test semi one we answered earlier, because it was really tied into what we were talking about. So if you've got a question for Blizzard Watch, the podcast, you can send it to our email address, which is podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show and not one of the like 3.5 billion other shows we're doing. And please, you know, things that Joe says all the time, I'm going to repeat here. Like, please, if you have a interesting pronunciation to your name and you want to hear it, please actually give it to us.
We're going to try and it's going to be real funny.
Yeah, we do our best. We do our best. But I'm sorry, there's 3 Ks in that. I don't know. But also, you know, tell us which show you want to ask the question for, because quite frankly, sometimes I feel kind of guilty when I steal one of Joe's, especially when it's blatantly not for the show, but I've stolen it. So
you know. I'm used to it.
He's used to it. I mean, quite frankly, I'm a horrible person. But yeah, let's move on. And we've already done that one. This one's not one I can do much with, but you know, I think Liz at least will have good insights. So this one's from Nick Crussell. Question for any podcast. I don't know how this would have worked on Lore Watch, to be honest with you, Joe. I think I've actually helped you out here.
I have ideas.
Sorry. How about Ampy and his guilds downing KT on hardcore servers? Even though 6 players died, including Ampy, that is an amazing feat to me. The amount of composure he had after dying and then continuing to lead perfectly was outstanding. How much dedication do you think it takes to make it that far in hardcore servers? I mean, downing every boss on the first attempt, probably multiple times, just blows my mind. I know you guys are raiders. What are your thoughts on this? P.S. Joe, I want to make an either red, white, or white, blue soldier / ninja / knight, etc. MTG commander deck. Any commander / card / theme suggestions? These two things aren't related, but you know, hey. You want to answer the theme, the card thing, and then Liz?
Let's do Liz's first, and then I'll do the thing later.
So Liz, do you have anything to say about Ampy's feat here?
It is wildly impressive to watch hardcore gamers doing this in-game content. I mean, I was enjoying watching them do this even, you know, before there were hardcore servers to do it on. But even if there aren't hardcore servers, if they're not on a hardcore server, the stakes are a little lower. I mean, kind of the social aspect of it is that you are playing a hardcore playstyle, and if you die, you die. And I've seen some amazing kills. I mean, I remember doing these bosses when they were new, and it didn't go that well.
Yeah, I remember when they were new. The idea that your first try on Kel'Thuzad and you managed to kill him with only 6 deaths.
That's
your
impressive.
First time. Yeah, that's Kel'Thuzad was a nightmare of a fight the very first time I did it.
I remember him being a nightmare even when we were farming him and trying for the Undying achievement.
Oh yeah. I skipped out on Kel'Thuzad so my guildmates could get Undying.
And we
I knew I would die.
The first time we did it, we got all the way through all of the bosses, all of the trash without anybody dying. And I'm a healer at this point. So, you know, keep this in mind with the level of stress that I was dealing with at the time. We get to Kel'Thuzad 1%. 1%. Ooh. And somebody dies to a lag spike.
Oh!
Only death we had the entire night. So I was so upset. We got it after that, but oh my god, it was brutal. And that fight was stressful at level. Mm-hmm. There was so much going on, so much to track, so many things to decurse and keep track of.
Actually, very rarely do I say this about Nax, but they actually made the KT fight more stressful on 10/25 in Wrath than it was originally in vanilla.
Because it was designed for 40 players.
Yeah. I raided it at level, you know, when we were all level 60 doing NACs.
Yeah, when I was 100 then, I didn't have any stress. Man, whatever.
Yeah. No, I did because I was tanking. So it was pretty stressful.
Yeah, that's
but fair. Then we to switch into the 1025 man one, the idea of being able to, the first time you walk in on that fight, even though you know what the fight's going to do, the first time you walk in on it, you get a kill with only six people dying. Like, that sounds like literal sorcery to me. Like, well, actually, they were sacrificing goats out back before they started their raid.
But also in a hardcore, yeah, on a hardcore server, it's like, you know, you die, you're dead, you're not coming back. There's no battle reses. There's no reses at all.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine being in the middle of that, being on Kel'Thuzad, and one of your guildmates dies.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then another one dies.
No
and then another one dies. With each person who dies, it's less likely that your character is walking away from this. And once you've spent all of this time leveling, gearing up, getting good enough to conquer Kel'Thuzad, and that has to be the most stressful thing because you spent so much time doing this. Mm-hmm. And as you watch your guildmates die and they aren't going to come back, it's like, everyone who goes down, you have less and less of a chance. And they pulled it off. They pulled it off. That's amazing.
Yeah. That the fact that the raid leader died and managed to not be upset about the fact that his character is gone, or if he was upset
about it. That's what we call task oriented.
Yeah. That's a guy who's like, you know, I am here for my group. And that's, yeah, that is impressive.
And anybody who's led a raid, and like had to have continued to lead a raid after you're down and there are no reses available in retail, it can be quite stressful because you're watching a bunch of stuff that you can't reposition yourself. You have to swing the camera around, do a whole bunch of odd things. And while Kel'Thuzad is a contained ish room, there's still so much going on. So not only to keep your composure after you die, but to be able to accurately and calmly call and continue to give direction to make sure your guild pushes through and or your raid pushes through and finishes that fight, I am incredibly impressed.
Yeah, that is an achievement. So yeah, straight up, nothing but respect on that one. But I think that's basically our answer to that question.
Yeah.
And I think that's basically the podcast.
Well, I'm gonna do that.
Can you do one more?
I was gonna say I'm gonna do the magic thing real quick from Nick, if you know if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Nick, thank you very much for indulging me in one of my recent obsessions. If you're going to do knights, I highly recommend you look at Esper colors, so white, blue, and black, in particular because the new commander that was released with March of the Machines, Sadar Jabari of Zulfir, is one of the only fair eminence commanders. It is a knight, and it feeds really nicely into the knight typal. A lot of fun, and because of those three colors, you have a wide variety of creatures and effects that you can have that span the entire history of Magic. You can do a lot of really cool stuff with it. As far as soldiers go, I'm going to let you in on a little super secret tech of mine, and that is run the Commander Harbin Vanguard Aviator. He's a blue-white soldier, only costs two, one blue, one white. So he's really, really cheap to keep bringing back out on the field, but he's also a 3-2 flyer. And if you attack with five other soldiers, he gives them all +1/+1 and flying until end of turn. It is very, very good. No, he really is a dirt cheap card. I think he's like 17 cents. And blue and white gives you access to a whole bunch of card draw, gives you a whole bunch of defensive cards that you can pull in there as well. You get access to things like the new Virtue of Loyalty, and I forgot the blue virtue is. But you can also throw things like the Valiant Veterans, Skystrike Officers, and make a really good but also very, very budget-friendly deck that are just nothing but soldiers. And also, I would say the super secret tech for that particular line is look back at Morrowind and look specifically at the Kithkin, because they happen to all be soldiers except for one or two that are knights. So there you go. There's your Joe talking about Magic for 2 minutes.
All right. I'm going to throw one more in here since Joe said somewhere that we have 50 minutes. I'm sure we don't have that much left at this point, but I'm going to throw this one in anyway. This one's from 6K from a couple weeks ago now, but I've wanted to talk about it for a while. QFTQ. It was for the Q, but I grabbed it for you. If everything in nature is slowly turning into a crab, does that mean God is a crab? What Six is talking about is carcinization, which is the general tendency among crustaceans to go from a tailed form similar to a lobster, like a crayfish or a lobster, to a form that does not have a tail or has an extremely reduced tail and otherwise looks like a crab. There are true crabs, of course. We've kind of picked one group at arbitrary, but there are a lot of animals that look like crabs that are not particularly related to the true crabs. For instance, Alaskan king crab, not a true
crab. Not actually a crab, yep.
Yeah. No, it is actually a crab because crab is a form.
And yes.
It's complicated.
There's the two major splits, right? There's the Brachyuria and then Anomura.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think it's actually Anomura, but I can't. Right now, we're going to move on because the point I want to make is, yes, carcinization is a thing. Yes, carcinization is cool, but it is by far not the only example of convergent evolution that we have. It's not even the most common. The most common is a toss-up between things turning into sharks and things turning into crocodilians.
The crocodilian one is really interesting.
Yeah, crocodiles aren't the first beings to basically look just like that. They are, in fact, only the most recent group. And modern crocodilians, everything that is in the crocodilomorpha, everything that is today considered a crocodilian, where it's a crocodile, a gharial, or an alligator, or a caiman, or any of their relatives, all of those animals are the most recent of their relatives to look like that. The first ones were the phytosaurs, and the phytosaurs go back 250 million years. And they aren't even, like, you can't even call them archosaurs because they actually branched out of reptiles, out of archosaurs before archosaurs actually existed. They're their own completely unique group. Sometimes they're called the sister taxa to the archosaurs, but they're not even directly related to crocodiles the way some of the others are. They were first. If you go and see a phytosaur skeleton, you will be hard pressed to tell it from a crocodile.
Yeah.
The only difference is that it has its nostril holes are on the top of its head. So it's even slightly better adapted for being a crocodile than crocodiles are, because crocodiles are actually still on their snout, just pointed up a little. The phytosaurs literally just said, nope, not even messing around with that, and put it on top of the head. But the phytosaurs died out. And we think it's because of the Triassic. There was a Triassic extinction between the Triassic and the Jurassic, which is one of the reasons that dinosaurs ended up being as dominant. But that wasn't the last time something then went into the water and acted like a crocodile. We immediately got another group that did that right after the Triassic extinction. And then we see multiple groups that did that and then branched out even further, like Tantistrophius, which has the gigantic, ridiculous neck. Its ancestors look a lot like crocodiles. Meanwhile, the actual crocodiles that we have today, their ancestors were on land during all of this, and they were growing. They looked like dinosaurs. And when I say looked like dinosaurs, I mean, if you look at the skull of a Phaeolosuchus, its skull looks like a T-Rex skull. It even has the temporal fenestra in the same place.
Also,
it's got the huge struts in the skull for spacing.
Also, stay tuned for the next Lore Watch where we talk about how elves are convergent evolution.
Yeah, we actually kind of did that one.
We absolutely
did. But my point is just that that's just one. That's one example. The crocodile one is just one example. The fact that there have been no less than 9 saber-toothed predators in the mammal line, and only two of them have been cats, actual cats. But there's also the marsupial cat, which also looks like a cat, Thylaca smilus. It looks a lot like a cat, even though it's a marsupial. It's technically not a marsupial. It's a relative of marsupials, but, trust me, just call it a marsupial. And that had the teeth very much like that. We also have the Barbarophilids and the Nimravids, both of which are so much like cats and are related to cats, but not cats. You have to actually look in their skulls to find the bones that tell you they're not cats. But even before them, in addition to stuff like the saber-toothed deer, the musk deer, which is alive today, has big pointy sabers in its mouth. The saber-toothed fish, we don't even know why that thing exists, or, fish were just jumping in on it. Technically speaking, though, we are related to fish. All fish and us, all tetrapods, are related. So that thing's technically in the same line. But then you go back and there's multiple saber-toothed proto-mammals. The Gorgonopsids, the Lyenops, the Dicynodont relative. There's multiple saber-toothed, you know, therapsids that are our ancestors and our cousins, essentially. And that has just recurred over and over again. The fact that we don't have any living saber teeth right now is the weird part. Because as long as there's been a mammal line animal, there's usually a saber tooth around. Except even during the Age of Dinosaurs, where there was a saber-toothed animal that was a herbivore, but it was alive for the big chunk of the Triassic, there's always been something. And it's weird that they're not here now. But at any moment, another one could show up. Evolutionaries. Anyway, my point is just, yes, the crab thing's really cool. Carcinization is really cool. World of Warcraft should definitely have more giant enemy crabs. I am totally on board with that.
Hey, listen, but we just got a giant one that we can ride on. I'm content.
Yeah, but doesn't they also have a really big knife?
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool too, by the way. More crabs with knives.
Knife but, crab is a thing.
Yeah, but it's not a sign of nature favoring crabs, and we're not all turning into crabs. Lots of things are turning into completely different things. There's so many things that have turned into sharks. In fact, sharks turned into sharks after previous animals that were related to sharks had the shark body plan first. Go look up Helicoprion. It's not a shark. It's a relative of what I think today they'd be called hagfish. Mm-hmm. It's a hagfish relative that had that body plan before sharks did. And then sharks were like, that's a cool body plan. I'm going to jack that. And then ichthyosaurs were like, that's a cool body plan. I'm going to jack that. And then crocodiles were like, oh, hey, I'm going to become a sea crocodile and I'm going to copy that body plan. And they did. And then mosasaurs were like, you know, that body plan would look really good on me. And so they stole it. And then dolphins, you know, everybody keeps stealing the shark body plan. So yeah, there's lots of other body plans that get stolen. It's not just crabs, but the carcinization thing is really cool. And I did want to point that out. Anyway, I had nothing to do with nothing, but here we are. You guys have anything to say before we wrap everything up?
I don't know what I could say to follow up on that. I don't know.
I just think it's funny because I literally went down this rabbit hole, like independent of any questions coming in like a week ago.
Yeah, the crab thing is nice.
It started with the crab thing and it went all over the place. So
convergent evolution is a trip.
It really is.
Now we're going to make Joe do the thing.
Indeed, because you know why? Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance of having your question answered on our podcast with a queue, and an ads reset experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you to Liz for being here with us and, of course, always providing, I mean, I don't want to say a sane outlook. It doesn't really seem fair to you, but a different outlook. And also thanks to all of you guys for, you know, listening and supporting us and occasionally even writing nice Reddit things saying that we're nice. We like that. Thank you. We're all blushing and stuff. If you want to support the podcast, as Joe has said in the past, you can do so by a lot of reasons. And one of the ways you can do it is to go and like our stuff, give the algorithm fodder to promote us to other people. This is a huge help to this site. And we really appreciate everybody who can go, whether it's Spotify or YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts, and like them, engage with them, comment on them, get them in front of other people. That's the way to do it. We appreciate that. And if you've got a question for the podcast, you can go to our Discord. We've got the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel, and we've got the Q and Podcast Questions channel for non-patrons because we still love you guys. We just like to support our patrons and make sure we give them something back for the support they're giving us. Or you can go to our email address, podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Send us an email. We look there too. And I guess, you know, at this point, guys, I want to say thank you very much. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast, and we'll be back next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.